Berger sat at her desk in the glass cage. It was 10:30 on Monday morning. She badly needed the cup of coffee she had just gotten from the machine in the cafeteria. The first hours of her workday had been taken up entirely with meetings, starting with one lasting 15 minutes in which Assistant Editor Fredrickson presented the guidelines for the day's work. She was increasingly dependent on Fredrickson's judgment due to her loss of confidence in Anders Holm. The second was an hour-long meeting with the CEO, Magnus Borgshaw, SMP's CFO, Christa Selberg, and Ulf Flodin, the budget chief. The discussion was about the slump in advertising and the downturn in single-copy sales. The budget chief and the CFO were both determined to cut the newspaper's overhead. "We made it through the first quarter of this year thanks to a marginal rise in advertising sales and the fact that two senior, highly paid employees retired. Those positions have not been filled," Flodin said. "We'll probably close out the present quarter with a small deficit, but the free papers, Metro and Stockholm City, are cutting into our ad revenue in Stockholm. My prognosis is that the third quarter will produce a significant loss."
"So how do we counter that?" Morgshaw said.
"The only option is cutbacks. We haven't laid anyone off since 2002, but before the end of the year we will have to eliminate 10 positions.
"Which positions?" Berger said.
"We need to work on the cheese plane principle. Shave a job here and a job there. The sports desk has 6.5 jobs at the moment. We should cut that to 5 full-timers.
"As I understand it, the sports desk is on its knees already. What you're proposing means that we'll have to cut back on sports coverage."
Flodin shrugged.
"I'll gladly listen to other suggestions."
"I don't have any better suggestions, but the principle is this. If we cut personnel, then we have to produce a smaller newspaper, and if we make a smaller newspaper, the number of readers will drop, and the number of advertisers too."
"The eternal vicious circle," Selberg said.
"I was hired to turn this downward trend around," said Berger. "I see my job as taking an aggressive approach to change the newspaper and make it more attractive to readers. I can't do that if I have to cut staff."
She turned to Borgshaw.
"How long can the paper continue to bleed? How big a deficit can we take before we hit the limit?"
Borgshaw pursed his lips.
"Since the earlier 90s, SMP has eaten into a great many old consolidated assets. We have a stock portfolio that has dropped in value by about 30% compared to 10 years ago. A large portion of these funds were used for investments in IT. We've also had enormous expenses."
"I gather that SMP has developed its own text editing system, the AXT. What did that cost?"
"About 5 million kroner to develop."
"Why did SMP go to the trouble of developing its own software? There are inexpensive commercial programs already on the market."
"Well, Erica, that may be true. Our former IT chief talked us into it. He persuaded us that it would be less expensive in the long run and that SMP would also be able to license the program to other newspapers."
"Did any of them buy it?"
"Yes, as a matter of fact. A local paper in Norway."
"Meanwhile," Berger said in a dry voice, "we are sitting here with PCs that are 5 or 6 years old."
"It's simply out of the question that we invest in new computers in the coming year," Flodin said.
The discussion had gone back and forth. Berger was aware that her objections were being systematically stonewalled by Flodin and Selberg. For them, cost-cutting was what counted, which was understandable enough from the point of view of a budget chief and a CFO, but it was unacceptable for a newly appointed editor-in-chief. What irritated her most was that they kept brushing off her arguments with patronizing smiles, making her feel like a teenager being quizzed on her homework. Without actually uttering a single inappropriate word, they displayed an attitude that was so antediluvian it was almost comical. "You shouldn't worry your pretty head over complex matters, little girl." Borgshaw wasn't much help. She didn't sense the same condescension from him, but he was biding his time and letting the other participants at the meeting say their piece. She sighed and plugged in her laptop. She had 19 new emails, 4 were spam. Someone wanted to sell her Viagra, cybersex with the sexiest Lolitas on the net for only $4 per minute. Animal sex, the juiciest horsefuck in the universe. And a subscription to fashion.nu. The tide of this crap never receded, no matter how many times she tried to block it. Another 7 messages were those so-called Nigeria letters from the widow of the former head of a bank in Abu Dhabi, offering her ludicrous sums of money if she would only assist with a small sum of start-up money, and other such junk. There was the morning memo, the lunchtime memo, 3 emails from Fredrickson, updating her on developments in the day's lead story, 1 from her accountant, who wanted a meeting to discuss the implications of her move from Millennium to SMP, and a message from her dental hygienist suggesting a time for her quarterly visit. She put the appointment in her calendar and realized at once that she would have to change it because she had a major editorial conference planned for that day. Finally, she opened the last one, sent from centraled@smpost.se, with the subject line, Attention Editor-in-Chief. Slowly, she put down her coffee cup. You whore. You think you're something, you fucking cunt. Don't think you can come here and throw your weight around. You're going to get fucked in the cunt with a screwdriver, whore. The sooner you disappear, the better. Beggar looked up and searched for the news editor, Holm. It was not at his desk, nor could she see him in the newsroom. She checked the sender and then picked up the phone and called Peter Fleming, the IT manager.
Good morning, Peter. Who uses the address centraled@smpost.se?
That isn't a valid address at SMP.
I just got an email from that address.
It's a fake. Does the message contain a virus?
I wouldn't know. At least the antivirus program didn't react.
Okay. It's very simple to fake an apparently legitimate address. There are sites on the net that you can use to send anonymous mail.
Is it possible to trace an email like that?
Almost impossible, even if the person in question is so stupid that he sends it from his home computer. You might be able to trace the IP number to a server, but if he uses an account that he set up at Hotmail, for instance, the trail will fizzle out.
Berger thanked him.
She thought for a moment. It was not the first time she had received a threatening email or a message from a crackpot. This one was obviously referring to her new job as editor-in-chief. She wondered whether it was some lunatic who had read about her in connection with Morander's death, or whether the sender was in the building.
Figueroa thought long and hard about how to investigate Gullberg. One advantage of working at Constitutional Protection was that she had the authority to access almost any police report in Sweden that might have any connection to racially or politically motivated crimes. Zalachenko was technically an immigrant, and her job included tracking violence against persons born abroad to decide whether or not the crime was racially motivated. Accordingly, she had the right to involve herself in the investigation of Zalachenko's murder, to determine whether Gullberg, the known killer, had a connection to any racist organization, or whether he was overheard making racist remarks at the time of the murder. She requisitioned the report. She found the letters that had been sent to the Minister of Justice and discovered that alongside the diatribe and the insulting personal attacks were also the words nigger lover and traitor. By then it was 5 p.m. Figueroa locked all the material in her safe, shut down her computer, washed her coffee mug and clocked out. She walked briskly to a gym at St. Eriksplan and spent the next hour doing some easy strength training. When she was finished, she went home to her one-bedroom apartment on Pontoniergarten, showered, and ate a late but nutritious dinner. She considered calling Daniel Mogren, who lived 3 blocks down the same street. Mogren was a carpenter and bodybuilder and had been her training partner off and on for 3 years. In recent months, they had also had sex as friends. Sex was almost as satisfying as a rigorous workout at the gym, but at a mature 30-plus, or rather 40-minus, Figueroa had begun to think that maybe she ought to start looking for a steady partner and a more permanent living arrangement. Maybe even children. But not with Mogren. She decided that she didn't feel like seeing anyone that evening. Instead, she went to bed with a book on the history of the ancient world.